This episode is brought to you by GoDaddy.com and all of the discount codes available at ScottSigler.com/GoDaddy. GoDaddy.com covers you for all of your website needs, from new domain registration, transferring your URLs, web hosting, email hosting, e-commerce, and more. Get a brand new domain registration for just $7.49 with the code SCOTT749. Check out all the different discount codes we have available over at ScottSigler.com/GoDaddy. You will save money if you do. And now, on with our story.
Welcome to Tuesday Terror, an anthology of stories written by junkies and based in the Siglerverse. This podcast is for mature audiences only. It contains foul language, adult situations, and prolific graphic violence. If you're easily offended, you should not listen any further. Today's story contains characters and story elements from The Rookie. So if you haven't read that book, it's likely elements of this tale will spoil portions of that novel for you. It's also possible that Renee may have guessed future GFL events correctly, but this story was written shortly after The Rookie was published in 2008. Hello, and welcome back, my fellow junkies. I do have the conclusion to Loyalty for you today. I hope you think it was worth the wait. I know I enjoyed it. It's coming to you right after a brief story so far. The story thus far. Masal the Efficient accompanies Quentin Barnes home after he's had a bit too much to drink at his birthday party. After getting him settled, Masal leaves Quentin in his apartment with his new robot, a gift he received at the party. Quentin quickly passes out, and the android proceeds to murder him. We are given a glimpse inside T'Kod the Graveling's psyche as he celebrates a successful vengeance upon Quentin for the Kraken's quarterback's disrespect of T'Kod Shamakoth, Mopook the Sneaky. And now, the conclusion of Loyalty. Loyalty is an alternative future history of The Rookie by Scott Sigler. Loyalty, Part 2, written by Renee Jordan. Greedock the Splithead tossed the Ionath Gazette message board onto the large, ornate desk in his office at Ionath Stadium. It had been a busy morning, and the afternoon looked to be even busier.
What are we going to do without Barnes?
Hokor the Hookchest's large eye swirled with pinks and reds. He was pacing rapidly in front of Greedock's desk, clearly upset well beyond the realm of rational thought.
Without him, we don't stand a chance of winning the championship next season. Where are we going to find another quarterback with his skill?
Greedock shot Hokor a baleful glance that served to snap the Kraken's head coach out of his hysteria. Greedock glared at him a moment longer.
No, we won't, but it does not matter.
Hokor, surprised and confused by the response, smoothed his antennae back with one pedipalp. Wisps of confused purple now joined the pinks and reds in Hokor's eye.
Apologies, Shamakoth. But I'm not sure I understand. Of course you don't, old friend. And that is why I get to sit behind the big desk. Barnes served his purpose. He got the team into Tier 1. Anything beyond that was merely added value. While we have lost his considerable talent, the upshot is that no one else can have him either. Try to see the positive side of this development. The positive side. Yes, of course, Shamakoth.
Hokor stopped pacing as Greedock motioned him towards a seat in front of the desk.
Does this mean that you, will not be launching an independent investigation?
Greedock leaned forward and put his fingers on the desktop.
Absolutely not. I was hoping to get many profitable seasons out of Barnes' talent, and that advantage has been taken from me. Nobody takes from me. I meant what I said in that press conference. I will find out who did this, and they will pay dearly.
Greedock's eye briefly went from clear to jet black, then back to clear.
In the meantime, Coach Hokor, you should begin looking for a replacement to back up Donald Pine. He has a few good years left, and he's won 2 Tier 1 championships. His weaning skills should be enough to keep us in Tier 1 next season, and protecting my trade route immunity means more to me right now than winning the title. Do you really trust Pine after his betrayal? Not in the slightest, but he knows that if I even suspect he is allowing outside entities to impact his performance, I will have him thrown out of the Touchback Shuttle Bay airlock while we're in punch space.
Hokor shivered a bit at the threat, and his eye turned solid pink in sympathetic fear at the prospect. There are many horrible ways in the universe to die, but being tossed out an airlock while in punch space was particularly brutal if the scientists were accurate about the effects on organic material.
Is Masal still being questioned by the police?
Greedock leaned back in his chair once again. Hokor regained his composure as he spoke.
Yes, Shamakoth. He has been down there for a few hours, but I expect they will be done with him soon.
The phone on Greedock's desk began to chime with the tone that indicated an incoming call on his personal, secured line.
Excellent. Send him to me as soon as he returns. Now, if you'll excuse me, Coach, I must take this call. Of course, Shamakoth.
Hokor stood and swept his antennae back once more, bowed, then left the office quickly. As soon as the office door closed, Greedock hit the button to open the line on the phone.
Tell me what you've found out.
Masal the Efficient was tired. Tired and angry at the death. No, murder. Of Quentin Barnes. He knew of Quentin's Purest Nation background. Knew he had been raised in a society that hated, well, pretty much everyone else in the universe. But he also watched Quentin rise above his upbringing, and he respected him for that. Now was not the time for sentiment, though. Greedock wanted to see him, to find out what he had said to the police. He had come straight from the police station to the Kraken Stadium office annex. The Ionath City Police. What a joke. Masal knew that Greedock had at least half of the ICP officers and patrolmen on his payroll. But apparently they wanted to at least pretend to actually be investigating this crime. They had asked him a dozen times, in a dozen different ways, to recount the details of his last encounter with Quentin Barnes. It was probably just a show for the media, which was all over this case like poshy bugs on a Quisling. Each time he recited the exact same story. And why shouldn't he? It was the truth, after all. He escorted Quentin home at the behest of Greedock, helped carry a load of birthday gifts up to his apartment, then left. The only detail of the evening that troubled him was the fact that Greedock had assigned him the task of ensuring that Barnes made it home safely. And hadn't he done that? Could Greedock hold him responsible for what happened to Barnes after he left? He pondered this for a moment, then he pressed the announcement button outside Greedock's office.
Masal the Efficient is at your door,
chimed the building AI.
Enter,
Greedock replied. The office door slid open, and Masal the Efficient stepped in. Greedock's office was rather large, and ornate by Quith standards, but Masal crossed the 10 meters from the threshold to Greedock's desk with his usual alacrity, then swept a pedipalp across his short antennae.
You wanted to see me, Shamakoth? Sit.
Greedock commanded, gesturing to one of the chairs in front of his desk. Masal chose to sit in the human chair rather than the one designed for Quith leaders, but only because it accommodated his larger size better.
I need you to tell me exactly what you told the police.
Masal recited the exact same story he had told the police, line for line.
You're sure you are not leaving anything out? Perhaps some detail that you failed to remember during your interrogation? No, Shamakoth. It is exactly as I told the investigating officer.
Masal's small eye gave no indication of betrayal, though it was tinged with the colors of nervousness.
Well, clearly there is something on your mind. Out with it, Masal. I don't have time for games today.
There was just the barest hint of frustration in Greedock's voice. Masal stood, swept his antennae back again, and bowed respectfully.
You tasked me with getting Mr. Barnes back to his apartment safely, Shamakoth, and I failed. I am prepared to accept whatever punishment you have in mind.
Greedock tapped the fingers of his right pedipalp rhythmically on the desktop a few times before responding.
No, Masal, you did not fail. Barnes was alive and well when you left him. And based on what I have learned from my source in the investigation division, you had no reason to suspect that he would not remain that way. I do not hold you responsible for his death.
Masal bowed again.
Yes, sir.
Greedock stared at him for a few moments more, considering his next move.
You may go, Masal.
Greedock waved a Pettipalp dismissively.
Yes, sir.
Masal bowed once again, but paused before leaving.
Shamakath, if I may be so bold?
Greedock gestured for him to continue.
Mr. Barnes was nice to me. He appreciated my service. It was the last thing he said to me before I left. Is there any way in which I can assist with your plan to deal with his murder? I will let you know if I have need of your skills. Just continue to be available on a moment's notice.
Chris Westfall was not having a good day. In fact, the last few years hadn't been all that great for him. He'd worked for 5 years as a cop in New Detroit back on Earth. He wasn't a great cop, but he was okay at the job and stayed out of trouble for the most part, right up until that incident with the Wittock hooker. It totally wasn't his fault, but he knew the girl's owners would hold him responsible anyway. He had to get as far away from Earth as he could, or else wind up as dead as that prostitute. So he ran, jumped on the first cargo barge he could sneak onto, and made his way out to Quith-controlled Ionath, or as he called it, the asshole of the galaxy. He'd managed to get a crappy job doing low-level scut work for some minor Quith crime boss named Mobook. It was just glorified errand boy stuff, mostly. Pick up a package here, drop off a package there, don't ask questions. Then Mopook went and got himself wasted, and Chris found himself doing club security at the Big Eye for Greedock the Splithead, another crime boss further up the chain. Lousy hours, and even lousier pay, sure. But he was still breathing, which was more than could be said for Mopook and several of his enforcers. But with John Tweedy and Virek the Mean staring down at him wanting answers, answers he wasn't sure he had, Chris started to wonder if all that might change very soon. Tweedy and Virek had escorted him to one of the small storage rooms at the Big Eye the moment he showed up for his shift. They managed to bounce his face off of a couple walls along the way, and now they were both throwing questions at him about Quentin Barnes' death like they thought he had something to do with it. Yes, this was not a good day at all.
Look, guys, I'm telling you I have no freaking idea what you're talking about.
Chris insisted for the sixth time.
What in the hell makes you think I had anything to do with it? Virek, he's not gonna talk.
Tweedy rushed forward right into Chris's face. He shoved Chris into the wall hard enough to cause his head to bounce off. The security guard's vision briefly filled with static-laced stars. His senses returned just in time to hear Tweedy say,
I think we should just start pulling fingers off him until he decides to tell us the truth. You hear me, boy? My best friend is dead, and I want to know what you know about it.
Chris felt his rectum tighten at the threat, and seeing the words,
Pain is my business, and business is good,
scrolled across Tweedy's forehead did not help. Pulling fingers off, not cutting them? Jesus, who does that? However, it was held as a universal truth among the staff at the Big Eye that John Tweedy was crazier than bug shit on burnt toast. Virek, who had more experience shaking beings down for information, pulled Tweedy back and took his place deep inside Chris's personal space, wrapping his strong fingers firmly around the man's throat, but not squeezing down yet. Tweedy was useful as an intimidation factor, but Virek sensed that he was dangerously close to going prematurely ultra-violent on this security guard, and that could significantly delay getting any useful information out of him. Greedock did not like unnecessary delays.
You were stationed at the only door without a working camera on the day of the party, human.
Virek seemed to almost spit this last word at him. Chris could see his reflection in the single baseball-sized eye of the imposing Quith warrior, and in that instant realized just how full-on terrified he looked.
The police determined that the Izuin robot was the murder weapon, and the front door delivery records don't show it coming through there before the party. nor does any of the camera footage from the other doors. So either you planted that bot among Quentin's gifts yourself, or you know who did.
Virak's eye went from swirling red and black to solid black as he made the accusation. Chris swallowed hard and tried to say something, but his throat betrayed him, locking up and causing his words to stall somewhere just short of his tonsils. His eyes flicked Tweety, who was hunching just behind Virak, clenching and unclenching his cinderblock-sized fists while "kill, kill, kill" replaced the previous text, scrolling across his entire face now. The psycho vibe was coming off of him as strong as radiation off of a punch drive core. Chris swallowed hard again, looked back to Virak, and forced the words up and out.
"Wait, wait, wait! Holy shit, I didn't plant nothing! Just wait a second!"
Chris needed to think. There was something trying to claw its way through the sphincter-tightening fog of fear. Think, damn it!
"Okay, just wait, guys. There was something. It was... I swear, I didn't think nothing of it at the time. I swear, I... Just spit it out before I start making you spit out teeth instead!"
Virak looked back at his teammate with a pained expression that said,
"Really? That's the best you could come up with?"
Tweety shrugged and went back to glaring at Chris.
"There was this guy, a worker, you know. He gave me a 50-credit chit, man, to let him in my door to deliver a gift, so he wouldn't have to wait in the delivery line out front. That's what he said. I recognized him, think he used to work for Mopook, Teabag or something like that was his name. I figured he was just a fan dropping off another present. That's all I know, man, I swear. He's the only being I let through all day who wasn't either a caterer or a stripper."
Virak nodded once, let go of Chris's throat, and backed out of the man's personal space.
"Are you absolutely sure that's who it was, human?"
"Pretty sure, yeah. I mean, all you guys, those guys, the workers, they all kind of look the same to me, but yeah. I remember seeing them a few times back when this place was the Bootleg Arms. Look, I swear to you guys, that's all I know."
Chris was sweating and rubbing his throat where Virak had grabbed him, and he suddenly realized that he very much needed to pee.
"I believe you, human. Consider yourself lucky for that."
Virak rose to his full height and flexed his powerful pedipalps.
"Your incompetence has contributed to Quentin Bond's death, though, and Greedock may not wish to let that go, so I can't guarantee that we won't be seeing you again sometime soon."
With that, Virak turned and ushered John Tweedy out of the storage closet. Chris Westfall felt his crotch get warm and wet, and he realized that he was going to have to run for his life once again. Greedock the Splithead drummed the fingers of his right pedipalp on his desk. He stared into the middle distance, contemplating what to do next. The security guard's confession simply added to the growing evidence that pointed to Takad the Groveling as being the architect of Barnes' murder. First, they'd trace the purchase of the robot through its individual unit number, which any competent professional would have scrubbed both from the body and the software. Then, there was the single hair the police forensics unit found in the modified arm. The DNA profile pointed to Takad's family line, though with the highly generalized Quith worker genetics, it was next to impossible to narrow it down to an individual. While it was possible that Takad was merely a patsy in all of this, Greedock felt that it was unlikely. If the real mastermind had been another GFL team owner, or even one of his many underworld enemies, Greedock would have found out about it through his vast network of informants by now. Most beings would think it inconceivable that a simple Quith worker could design and perpetrate such a clandestine murder plot, but Greedock knew all too well that there is usually at least one exception for every rule. The Quith leader felt a conclusion slowly forming in his mind. If his target had been anyone of note, another mob boss, a team owner, even some other public figure, he would have made his retribution more overt. But no one would care if the message boards and news hollows reported the mutilated body of a lowly Quith worker being found in the Ionath sewers. No, for this job, he decided that discretion was in order. No need to make a spectacle of someone who would not be noticed in the first place. Plus, such actions always left the chance of the deed being traced back to his organization. Quick and quiet was what Greedock needed for this job, and he knew of only one hitter who could absolutely guarantee those qualities in his work. He stopped drumming his fingers and picked up his phone, opening the secured line. He dialed a very special number, and when the receiving party answered, he said,
"I have a special job for you." "No, the other kind of job. Just get to my office as quickly as you can. I will give you all the details you need here."
The assassin waited in the dark of Tikod's domicile on the outskirts of Ionath City, many kilometers outside of the Radfree Dome. He'd been there for several hours, quietly waiting for the occupant's return. He thought about why he was there, about the events that had led to this situation. This was the most personal job he'd ever done for Greedock the Splithead, and he found himself lost in the memories of recent cycles. After all, he'd watched Quentin Barnes from the very beginning of the young quarterback's Tier 2 career. His had been the finger on the trigger of the pulse cannon that had ultimately convinced Stedmore Osborne, owner of the Tier 3 McCovey Raiders, to sell Barnes' contract to Greedock in the first place. He had watched Quentin's hubris falter after his initial failures with the Krakens. He had been witness to the boy letting go of the racism of his Purest Nation upbringing, replacing it with respect and trust in his teammates, regardless of their species. He had great admiration for Quentin Barnes, and he felt a deep sense of honor that he had been tasked with avenging the young quarterback's murder. It was the first time the assassin had ever experienced such emotions in relation to a sanctioned job. He imagined that this was what Quith warriors must feel when they went into battle. The emotions swirled around in his one small eye, evident in shades of orange and red and purple, almost intoxicating in their intensity. As soon as he heard his target enter the small apartment, the emotions and memories were pushed to the background. The eyes shifted to a steady shade of dull gray, and the professional killer was all that remained. Tikad stumbled into the tiny kitchen of his small apartment, still fairly stoned from his evening at the gin bar down the street. He'd been getting completely smashed every day for the last week, secretly celebrating his successful revenge against Quentin Barnes. Tonight he'd even managed to score a few raw juniper berries, which had left him an incoherent mess in a corner of the bar for a while. As he flicked the light on, he thought that maybe raw berries were too intense for him, and he'd just stick to processed gin from now on. It took Tikod a full 5 seconds to realize that there was someone sitting at his small kitchen table. It took a few seconds more for him to recognize exactly who the intruder was, and that he was pointing a small pistol.
"What the hell are you doing here?"
Tikod slurred in native Quith. If this had been some cheesy action holo, the assassin might have responded with a witty quip or some snappy one-liner. This wasn't a movie, though. This was real life, and as such, the assassin simply fired his pistol at his target without saying a word. The weapon looked like a standard Trappist Arms PT-17 blaster pistol, but it had been gutted and modified with a stolen Kredorakian entropic accelerator module. The bolt from the pistol looked like a smoky black bar wrapped in fine blue lightning traveling at 365 meters per second. It struck Tikad the Groveling just to the right of center mass in his chest, and he started to disintegrate before he even realized what had happened. The actual workings and effects of an entropic accelerator are not really understood by most sentients, but basically it works like this. A mass of specific negative energy is contained within a plasma shell, which is shot out of the weapon by highly efficient magnetic accelerators. That plasma bolt remains on a constant linear trajectory until it makes contact with organic matter. Upon such contact, the plasma shell breaks down, which enables a direct quantum reaction between the contained negative energy and the positive energy of the subatomic mass of the organic matter. There are some fairly complicated mathematics and quantum laws involved at this point, but basically what happens is that the subatomic particles that make up the atoms, which in turn make up the molecules of the organic matter, lose their energy and simply cease to exist. This effect cascades to surrounding organic matter until the entire organism, literally, disintegrates. Tikad the Groveling started to feel these effects approximately 1.3 seconds after the entropic bolt hit his body. He tried to scream, but by then it was too late. Within 15 seconds, Tikad was no more. The assassin put the small pistol back in his pocket and pulled out another device that looked like a palm-sized message board. He typed a few words, hit the send button, then tossed the device into the small kitchen's plasma-fired waste incinerator. He placed the chair he'd been sitting in back in its proper place and looked around one last time to make sure that he hadn't missed anything before quietly leaving the apartment. He had to get back to Rad Dome and attend to his more regular duties for his shamakai. Greedock the Splithead quickly read the new message on his holoscreen.
"It is done,"
was all it said, but those three words caused Greedock's pedipalps to twitch for a moment in the quith equivalent of laughter. It also caused his softball-sized eye to briefly swirl with orange and black, the colors of happiness and anger. Quith emotions are sometimes complicated like that. Greedock knew a few other quith who earned their surnames as completely as Masal. The Efficient. Indeed. Especially after Greedock had discovered the little worker's talent for skills beyond those required of a team manager. If things had gone just a bit different for Masal, he could have been a warrior. He probably should have been, and his relegation to the worker class was just an unfortunate error. But such is life in the Concordia. A bit of good training, though, coupled with Masal's natural knack for remaining unseen, and the little unassuming worker had become the deadliest and most discreet hitter Greedock had ever had in his stable. With the unfortunate business of Quentin's murder attended to, Greedock deleted the message from his screen and turned his attention to other matters. Loyalty was written by Renee Jordan, edited and performed by Ariok Morningstar. Renee is one of Scott's invaluable secret agents. Ariok does a lot of production work for him. Scott uses his secret agents as fiction consultants to ensure that he is never wrong in their particular field of expertise. Renee is a veteran of the United States Army who provides our beloved FDO with accurate descriptions of military firearms, vehicles, and aircraft. She has also assisted Scott with specialized knowledge of chemical, biological, radiation, and nuclear warfare equipment and techniques. Renee has already earned a permanent place in the Siglerverse in the Crypt, Shakedown. Part 2. Both Renee and Ariok are active in the ScottSigler.com forums. Renee is known as Perfect Day for Dying, or PDFD. Ariok goes by Sirok. He's also been fortunate enough in that Scott named the kicker of the Krakens after him. If you have a story you'd like to submit, please send it to me at ariok@scottsigler.com. That's ariok@scottsigler.com. Full submission guidelines can be found at scottsigler.com/Tuesday Terror Submissions. I'll have another story for you in a fortnight. Cheers! Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Tuesday Terror, produced by Morningstar Studios in conjunction with Dark Overlord Media. Music courtesy of the band Separation of Sanity. Check them out at reverbnation.com/Separation of Sanity. For more information on the Siglerverse, please visit scottsigler.com. Sorry.